Welcome back to the show. It is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. My name is Will Nalton. It's Monday, which means we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Welcome in former Calgary Flame, former NHLer, and current Sportsnet analyst. He is Christopher Steed. Chris, thanks for doing this. As always, let's dive right in. I know, you know, certainly your former club, Chicago's dealt with this in the past over the years, but not very rarely do you see a team at a conference final level switching goaltenders in the middle of the series. What did you make of Peter DeBoer's decision to go with Robin Lehner last night?
That is a gutsy call. Listen, I respect it. Like, I really do respect making a hard call. What I have a tough time with in a little bit is knowing that I feel like Peter's been waiting for this moment to get Mark on out of the net. That's my own take. I don't feel he fully trusts Marc-Andre Fleury or respects him to the extent that I think Mark deserves. But it's a call that he made. It paid off for his team. I think he likes Lehner because Lehner's a blocking goalie. He's bigger. He takes up more net. He's not going to try to play the puck. He's not as dynamic as Fleury. So you might be able to rely on him in a certain system because the shots are coming from more outside. They're not allowing as much quality. So maybe there's also data that they have that we don't know about that type of goaltender comparative. But I personally thought it was a real gutsy call. It paid off. So I really, really respect that part. But again, I just feel like he's been waiting for it.
On the other side of that, I mean, the big question is now, what do they do in a pivotal game five tomorrow night? And I got to ask you, just from a player standpoint, in terms of confidence, and that means everything in the game, and especially for a goaltender, you have the gaff if you're Fleury, and then you don't even get the start the next night out. Is it hard to go back to him? Like, is it now?
0% chance. It's 0% chance. I didn't mean to cut you off there, Will, but I'm telling you, because we don't even need to finish the question. It's literally, if he does not start Lehner, then Lehner's starting. Like, it is pretty apparent to me that he wants Lehner in the net. And this is a best case scenario for Pete DeBoer, is that they win and now he can just go back to Lehner. It's Lehner's ball now. And if he drops it in game five, Fleury will go back in. But I would bet my house on it that Lehner's going tomorrow. And let's not make this a literal bet, but let's just say, you know, but I believe it is going to be him.
Now, the other part of this, and maybe this is time for an epic Christopher Steed rant, but there's a lot of people talking about the officials, and I'm just curious where you stand on it. And I know Ron McLean made the point last night on the broadcast, because of COVID and the quarantine and the border, all that bottled in, the same two officials refereed games 3 and 4 in Montreal, and it's very rare do you see that in the playoffs. I'm curious what you thought in terms of the officiating last night and in the grand scheme of things, where things are at right now.
Listen, there's no excuses. There's no excuses for the reffing that we saw last night and we've actually seen, I think, a lot throughout this playoffs. And it comes just down to consistency. They're trying to manage the game. That's what he's trying to do. He's like, I don't want to take this guy. I don't want to take that guy. I've said forever, just call the penalty. Call the penalty. You don't want participation medals. Then why are you handing out a team? Say if a team's winning 8-1. Why are you, if the team who has one goal keeps slashing the team with 8 goals, right? Why don't they get a penalty? Because you don't want them to put a 9th goal on the board, a 10th goal on the board. You're technically giving them participation medals. I've tried to say this forever. I don't care if it's 2-1 or 1-1 and it's at the end of a game. If someone gets elbowed in the head, if you get tripped on a breakaway, call the penalty. That will lead to consistency. And if players can't abide by the rules, because they're, again, watching the Islanders play, they take penalties all over the ice. They take 1-minute penalties that should actually be called, but they're not quite bad enough in today's rules to be a 2-minute penalty. If they would just call those penalties, the players would have to abide by it. And yeah, you'd get an influx in penalties at the start, but later on, the players would learn to play within the system or that system, because if not, you would find players that can play in that structure. So the inconsistency lies in game management. We see that. Stop it. You can't do it, or you're going to consistently see what we've seen over these playoffs.
So there is no danger for you in terms of having too many penalties called?
No, there's not. If it's a penalty, it's a penalty. That's what it is. Don't take a slash. Don't put your stick in someone's feet. After the whistle, I don't mind pushing. I love that. You know, you're pushing someone, but then all of a sudden you get a punch in the head. Like Suzuki, yeah, Suzuki's pushing with McNabb. That's awesome. You know, you're kind of wrestling around, but then McNabb punches him in the head. That's a penalty, right? And then Chris Lee looks away. He didn't even look. I was like, you just saw him get punched in the head. Let them compete. Let the emotion come out. That's the best part of the game. The guys want to get in a bit of a scrum after. That's great. If guys want to chirp each other, that's great. But when you see a blatant call, a blatant penalty, you have to call it. You have to call it.
He is Christopher Stieg, former NHL player, our Monday guest here on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960. The Fan. Game 5, Vegas and Montreal will go tomorrow. That series is tied at 2 apiece. And, man, I got to be perfectly honest. I've had to eat some crow here today because I did not think Montreal had any chance in this series. I'm not sure where you were going in. The series is tied 2-2. They were actually the better game in Game 4 last night. It was kind of the reverse of Game 3 where, you know, Robin Lehner stood on his head and kept things alive for Vegas. What's impressed you about Montreal, Chris? Like, what? How are they doing this right now?
I'm taking a lot of heat right now from a lot of my
you and Montreal. Me, buddy. You and me. My Twitter's blowing up. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm taking a lot of hate mail. So, like, what happened was at the start of this year, and I actually still kind of believed it, is Montreal is a really good team, but everyone was touting them as a great team, and I was like, they're not a great team. Now they're playing right now like a great team. They have been better than Vegas in 3 of the 4 games, clearly better than Vegas. I would even say 3.5 of the games, or, you know, maybe not 3.5, but 3.25 of the games, let's say. They've been the better team. They deserved to win last night. And they're actually playing, I would say, within the rules. And again, coming to officiating, they are getting screwed in the officiating category as well. And I don't want to admit it because I did not like Montreal in a sense, but they are not getting many calls. Vegas is trying to intimidate Montreal. You can intimidate Montreal. You can intimidate maybe the odd guy like Caulfield or some of Suzuki, which they're not easily intimidated. But you can intimidate Weber. You can intimidate Edmondson. So stop playing like that, Vegas. They thought they were just going to come in here and bully them like they could bully Colorado. And they forgot how to play hockey. It's literally like, and they also are missing Stevenson, which is a clear miss for a team that's not deep in the middle. But they're missing that guy, and they're trying to bully these guys out of the building, and they're not going to do it. So Vegas, play physical, play hard, and stop trying to assert your physical presence on Montreal because it's not going to happen. Get back to playing hockey. But Montreal has taken that kind of game plan, and they've put it right back on Vegas, and it's frustrating Vegas, and they're doing a really good job. So you got to give Montreal a lot of credit, and they're playing good, and they're veterans. No one likes a veteran scoring more than me. Eric Staal, Corey Perry. These guys are difference makers every single game.
What I wanted to ask you this too, because, you know, we were trying to talk about it on Friday on the radio and trying to put yourself in a player's shoes in terms of when you have a big thing in your series go on where your head coach tests positive for COVID, like what kind of impact does that have on the team, on the game, Chris?
Well, I think you'd want to win it for him, especially, you know, he's going through that. He's not around the team, and you want to go out there and put your best foot forward. I mean, I've never been in this situation, so I can't exactly tell you what it would be, but the first thing that would come to mind is let's just win it for him. Let's do what it takes and try to get him the W because we know he's probably sitting at home punching the walls.
No doubt about it. I guess just from a head coaching standpoint, though, I know – you know, there's always more than one capable coach on a staff. So in terms of the impact of that, is that something you can measure? Is that a big loss for that coaching staff?
It is.
You know what I'm trying to say? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Maybe I answered that wrong. But it's hard because when you're a head coach, you got a lot going on, right? You're trying to teach. You're trying to see what lines are out there. You're trying to see who's going. You're trying to have a feel for the game. As an assistant coach, you're more zoned in. The defense coach is a little bit like that, but the forward coach, like Alex Burrows, is more focused on who's up next and maybe the PP. The D coach is just like, get the right D pair out there. That head coach has a lot going on. He's trying to shape up the D and match it with the forwards. He's trying to see who's going at that time. Maybe he can inject some, you know, energy with one line, with one guy on another line. There's a lot of mixing and matching and a lot of moving parts as a head coach. So for, you know, for Luke Richardson to come on the bench and, you know, coach a really good game, that's not easy to do as an assistant, to hop right into the head spot, especially if you've been in that spot as an assistant and you've only had you know, you're in a box basically as an assistant coach, and now you're out of the box and pieces are moving everywhere. So it was really impressive what he did in that game.
There we go. Christopher Stieg, former NHL player, our Monday analyst here on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Before we let Chris go, we'll shift to the Eastern Conference. I guess not technically the Eastern Conference, the other semifinal, Islanders and Lightning. And the thing that is impressive here, much like Montreal, I don't know if we saw it as lopsided, but certainly did not expect it to be a 2-2 series tie. I don't think a lot of people. And yes, they went to six games a year ago, but you know, the Islanders don't have the high-end skill that Tampa does. What stuck out to you in this series as they're tied at 2 for a pivotal game 5 tonight?
Well, Tampa went to sleep in the first period yesterday, and you could see when they came out to play that the Islanders just can't play with them. But the Islanders, they play this style. They sit back, and once the puck gets into the zone, they pressure you. And it's a real frustrating style to play against. And I think you're seeing the Lightning play a little bit too loose, especially early on in games. And it allows the Islanders to hang around instead of just bringing everyone back and coming at them in waves, coming at them with speed. They're trying to do it all themselves early in games. They're not keeping the game simple enough. And that's playing right into the Islanders' hands. So I still have Lightning winning this series. I thought they were going to do it in, I think I said 5 or 6 games. Obviously, that's not true either. Just like I thought Vegas was going to win in 5 games, that's not true. But if they could get back to just coming at them with speed like they did in the second and third period, they get, you know, 2-3 forwards back, they hit the guy in the middle, they kick it out, and now they're going. And now Islanders are sitting back on their heels, and it's really hard to contain that when you're sitting back on your heels. If they can keep doing more of that, but from the start of the game, I think the Lightning can take it to the Islanders, and I would hope that would be the case tonight.
7-0 last year after a loss in the playoffs, 4-0 this year after a loss in the playoffs. Not even just specifically with the Lightning, Chris, but in your years in Chicago, you probably went through same things when you guys were really, really good. What makes good teams hard to beat in back-to-back games?
Well, it's just resilience. You know you can park it. Like if you've had a bad game, you park it and you move to the next day and you put that in the past. And those little mistakes that added up to a loss won't follow you to the next game, right? Those teams that can lose 2, 3, 4 games in a row, that one mistake in game one, you'll still be thinking about that in game four. The best teams know how to park that. They know how to move on to game two. They don't worry about the little stuff, but they also focus on what didn't work and what's going to work. They make the adjustments. That's the big thing. You can see coming into each game, they're making slight little adjustments, whether it be line matches, whether it be power play setup, whether it be people in and out of the lineup, the top teams, the guys who know how to switch from game to game, they all have those little adjustments, and they all have the mental capability in order to get to the next game without remembering the past.
Final one for you. We'll end with a local product, Calgary kid Braden Point. If he scores tonight, he'd be the second player ever in league history to score in 8 consecutive playoff games. Does this guy get enough love, and what makes him so special, Chris?
He's got compete. You could see when he scored that goal, he was screaming and the whole building could hear him scream. He's got speed. He's got smarts. And I never knew he was, like, I remember watching him in World Juniors. I was like, he's a good player, but I didn't think he was that fast. Like, I don't know what kind of turbo boosters he got put on those skates from the age 19 to 20 to 21, but he's getting faster. He's so efficient. He's a lot like Bergeron. You know, he's not going to wow you all the time with fancy stick handling. He's faster than Bergeron. Bergeron's a little bit better defensively, I would say. But they're really similar in the sense that they make the game look so easy, makes it look simple, and they can just beat you in all facets. So him and Kucherov work unbelievable together as well. And you can see that his game's gone to another level because Kucherov can get the puck to point where other guys couldn't get it to point in and about the regular season. So his game's gone to the other level because playoffs, you can get to your emotion on another level. That's what I said the Leafs need to do. Point can get it there. And then he brings back Kucherov, who's getting him the puck with time and space all over the ice, and it just makes him so deadly.
What a team. What a team. Game 5 tonight, Islanders, Lightning, 2-2 series tie will be broken. Chris, thanks for this. As always, enjoy the rest of the week, man.
Yep, take care, guys.